All right, the Ira Kaufman podcast rolls on, and we're proud to present it here on JoeBucksFan.com. And, of course, it is presented by and delivered by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, who graciously present all of Ira's work, his three columns Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Joe Bucks Fan, and his podcast right here. And we're actually sitting today again at our new home away from home, if you will, at least for the off season. Port Richey Hooters right on the waterfront. Just a jam right off US 19.
Weather's lovely.
Weather's lovely. Birds are chirping, little background music.
People on jet skis floating by, ready to hit the Gulf.
It's the fantastic Hooters experience. And just waterfront, this is good. You've never worked so easily, Ira, in your life.
And I believe it should be noted that I'm ordering a salad today, DeKemper.
You're behaving.
I want that out there front and center.
Okay. Front and center. Well, tell your wife you behave yourself. All right. So now, Ira, of course, we touched last podcast on your breakfast with Tony Dungy. You wrote a little bit about it. Before we get into some of the Hall of Fame stuff and some of the really interesting Bucks stuff we have to talk about, any final shots, any final impressions from that time with Dungy? And let me at least call attention to one quote. Lee, I'm not sure if you saw this, but the one quote I thought was fascinating from Dungy in your column. Dungy said, now Mike Smith can stop, essentially turn his attention away from teaching his defense and turn his attention to the opponent. And that was such a very telling thing by a guy who's coached and been a coordinator. What was more behind that from Dungy?
I think Dungy was speaking from experience, Lee. The 96 Buck defense was okay. It was okay. Marked improvement from 95, the Sam Weiss, Floyd Peters or whatever. But it wasn't great. And by year two, it was outstanding. And the Bucks made the playoffs in year two. That was Dungy's only losing season, was that first year. The only time he ever had a losing season in 13 years. Part of the reason he has a bust in Canton. But what he meant, Steve, was he experienced it in 96. Players weren't sure of their roles. They weren't sure they could rely on the guy next to them to get the job done. Just do your job. That's the famous Belichick quote. Don't try to do more. In fact, I asked Dungy, when you don't trust a guy and you try to do more, does that ever work? He said, it never works. It never works when a guy tries to fill two gaps when he's supposed to be responsible for one gap.
Interesting, because Shannon said something similar.
It never works. And by year two, everybody bought in, Steve, and the focus was on, here come the Vikings, here come the Chicago Bears, instead of wondering about what we're doing. You can game plan more. And I think he expects that out of the 2017 Bucks. And that's very encouraging if you're a Buck fan. The fact that most of the players, most of the starters are going to return intact. There might be a new starter or two. We'll see.
I'm sure there will be.
Along the D-line, we'll see if Darryl Smith returns at strong side linebacker. That's not written in stone.
Not even Lee. Close.
Not written in stone.
34?
Yeah. So we'll see. Could be a defensive tackle, could be a new D-end in town. Steve, we'll see what free agency in the draft brings. But you're right. That was a critical quote from Dungy about the Bucks going forward. And just the potential of this defense, Lee, I think Dungy's all in on, he's very bullish on the future of the Buck defense.
Well, I think it's very telling, and I mentioned this in a previous podcast, too, and obviously I wrote about it on JoeBucksFan.com. After the final game, now, I've got tons of interviews I haven't even transcribed yet in the locker room after the final game. But I talked to at least half dozen defenders about, at that time, it looked like Mike Smith was out the door. Their reaction was like, you could see them. They're happy. They won the last game. They're winners. And you bring up Mike Smith losing, and they were just deflated. Like, the air came right out of their balloon, and it shook their head. Like, oh, man, I understand what he wants to do. I understand he wants to be a head coach. Wish him luck, but damn, I wish he would stay. McCoy's reaction was obvious, and I'm sure the rest of the defenders are. They really hated to see him go. So I think it speaks volumes. Is all the players I spoke to, and every one of them, it was like telling them a relative was in the hospital or on a deathbed. The way they reacted, like, oh man, I hope he stays, a son of a gun. And they were resigned to the fact that he was gone. So, just the fact that they thought that much of him. That just tells me a lot about the guy.
They're building, Steve, they're building a lot of camaraderie on that side of the ball. And look, you love that quote that I had from Brent Grimes last week, Steve. The one about you can't have independent contractors around here. That's a very telling quote, Steve. Maybe that's the case of what has happened around here the last few years. And that's changed big time in Tampa.
Oh, absolutely. I just wanted to see, if you had anything more from Dungy. And I'm glad, hopefully next time he picks up your check.
Well,
and
one other point, Steve, one other point Dungy made. He thought it was important. He thought it was important. And it does separate him from Brian Dawkins.
Him being
John
Lynch,
you mean?
Yeah. John Lynch from Brian Dawkins is going to a different conference league. After being given up for dead with a serious neck injury, and the Bucks thought he was through, different conference, different scheme. Denver was not known for playing at Tampa, too. Champ Bailey, I believe, was a young player at that time. They had a guy named Al Wilson, was a pretty good linebacker. But John Lynch was not surrounded by elite talent in Denver, as he was in Tampa. Champ Bailey was a young corner in Denver at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2004.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like he's chopped liver.
He wasn't.
Well, no,
he wasn't,
but he was a young player. He was a young player, an up and comer, and and here he makes four more Pro Bowls in a different scheme. And as I mentioned on our previous podcast, his first 3 years in Denver, they had a top nine scoring defense to go along with the seven previous years in Tampa. That takes a special guy to be able to fit in. And Dungy thought it was significant. Steve, Dungy thought it was significant that John Lynch is a member of two different franchises' Ring of Honors. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The more you think about that, it is very significant. Now, Doug Williams holds that distinction. But I dare say the reason he's in the Redskins.
Don't go there.
No, the reason he's in the Redskins' Ring of Honor, Steve, is based
on. Super Bowl, period.
Basically one game. A historic game, and I'm not taking away from that. It is a historic game.
Well, he basically came off the bench, and they rode to the Super Bowl.
But it's not based on a body of work.
Oh, of course.
I thought you were going to go there about Hall of Fame and Doug Williams. Come on, Ira.
No.
Now, here's one for you. I got to ask you about this, and maybe some fans will be interested in this because it's all about intrigue. We all know that the Bucks publicly said John Lynch is toast, his neck is bad, blah, blah, blah. In retrospect, we know that Bruce Almighty, if not Chucky, held the Fourth Estate with disdain. They often came up with fairy tales to mask their decisions when it was complete BS. Was that just a front to get the... Because obviously Lynch is a very popular player. Was that just a front to try to quash any fan blowback on getting rid of Lynch? Like, oh, we think he's done his next bad?
Perhaps, Lee. You know, you have to remember that at the time, Steve, they also let Sapp go to free agency, and Sapp did not make a smart decision going to Oakland because that didn't work out very well. The Raiders were a terrible team. Sapp got there in 2004. They did nothing, the Raiders. I think Sapp could have done better. I think the Bengals were after him. Sapp had some other offers. He made a poor choice.
Yeah, he took the money.
Well, he took the money. And Al Davis and the Raiders was a little lower.
So if you're already letting Sapp hit free agency, and now Lynch is reaching that age, that tender age, 32, 33. Lee, you make a fair point. But there were serious neck concerns about John Lynch. Now, the Broncos went in.
I believe he had surgery. Didn't he have surgery?
He did have surgery. So, I mean, and, for a 32, 33-year-old safety with neck surgery, maybe it's understandable.
And a hitter like him.
You know, we saw them divest themselves of Simeon Rice off one shoulder injury. It's the first injury Simeon Rice ever had. We thought the Bucks were crazy. I know I did. And it turned out I was wrong. Simeon Rice never did a peep in the NFL. I believe Dungy brought him to Indy. If he couldn't play for Dungy, he wasn't going to play for
anybody.
He shadowed
himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. The just to clarify, Champ Bailey, he arrived with John Lynch, moving from the Redskins to the Broncos as a free agent. So, I mean, he was an established player, but still a younger player and also in a new system,
which was
the broader point. All right, Ira, let's move on from Champ Bailey, the Broncos, all that stuff, and John Lynch, and you're the last of your chit-chat with Tony Dungy. I'm sure you guys will be back together again.
Going to have more news on my next podcast, Steve.
Absolutely. All right, so, Ira, shifting to the Bucks, Derek Brooks last week jumps in. Now, Garrett, Mr. Brooks, very calculated speaker, very very direct guy, knows what he's saying, knows what he's not saying. He jumps on WDAE with his weekly show with Steve Dumig. First thing he says, not second, not third, first thing he says is he expects the Buccaneers will win a playoff game next year and be in the divisional round of the playoffs. Why is Mr. Brooks saying this, Ira? What's going on here?
Very atypical, Lee, for Derek Brooks. Steve's right in his introduction. Everything's very calculated with the man, and he knows the impact of a Buck icon throwing those kind of expectations on the 2017 Bucks. He's got to be all in. Now, we know he's a Jameis guy.
Oh, yeah.
Lee, there's no doubt about it. He's a Jameis guy, and why shouldn't he be? Obviously, he feels he's seen enough, Steve, that with a couple of additions. Now, he took an extra step, making the playoffs. Now he's got him winning the first-round game, Steve. I don't think the Falcons are going anywhere, Lee. Matt Ryan's in his prime. They're not going to be 4-12 next year. This is going to be a tough division to win. Carolina's going to be a lot better.
You would think Saints should be.
And New Orleans is always middle of the pack.
Yeah.
So, very interesting for Brooks to lay that out there like that. I don't know if Dirk Cutter and company really love that kind of pressure, Steve. But, you know, he's already put the pressure on me to get John Lynch in the Hall of Fame. So why can't Light and Cutter share a little pressure, Steve?
I thought it was fascinating, Ira. This went down on Wednesday. 2 days later, Mike Smith is signed. My nose for conspiracy theories tells me that Brooks wouldn't have said that if he didn't know Mike Smith was coming back. Maybe he got tipped off on that fact.
Brooks talks to people at One Buck Place, Lee. We know that for a fact.
Especially no people with last name starts with a G.
Yeah.
He definitely talks to people.
Hey, you know, I know Mr. Brooks has been known to listen to the podcast, Ira. You know, we see him actually every week at WDAE. Our show comes on after his on Wednesdays. But that's what makes it interesting is because he knows we're going to write about it. He knows that Team Glazer and everybody else is going to read it. So it was interesting. It was really quite an all-in calculated move.
I don't remember him saying that in recent years, Steve.
No.
And I don't remember him saying it, Lee, after the 2010 season. I don't remember that.
Interesting.
Well, I thought Lee was just about to say, well, he hasn't said it because the Bucks have been dreadful.
Yeah.
But it was a bold call and worth mentioning here to get your custodian of Canton-like take on it. Now, Ira, speaking of Hall of Fame, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon presents your podcast. And at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, Ira, it's time to take a vacation. Buy with zero down and make zero payments for 3 months. Or drive new ATSs, 319 a month, XT5s, 439 a month. Take a vacation at Brandon's only luxury dealership. Visit EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Now, Ira,
I thought these deals were going to end with the holidays, Steve.
Never.
They just keep rolling?
Always something new.
Like Joe Bucks fan.
Just keeps it. Exactly. Every day we're here. And your columns every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Ira, Devin Hester, okay, everybody watched him come out of nowhere, if you will. These bees are attacking me here. This is unbelievable.
I understand it.
Must be my my cologne. We're outdoors here at Port Richey Hooters, and I think the swarm has passed now.
Got an angry bee over there. Maybe that bee wasn't happy with Brooks's remarks.
He must be a Pewter Report reader, that bee. Anyway.
Ooh.
Seriously, Ira, you take Devin Hester, you watched his performance for the Seahawks against the Cowboys. I ask you two questions. One, is that not the guy the Bucks need in a heartbeat? A guy, even though he says he might retire, a guy who knows Dirk Cutter's offense, could be a number five or six receiver, way better than Freddie Martino from the Velvet Line Lounge at the Vero Beach Ramada Inn. And obviously, he still has all the juice in the world as a returner, which the Bucks don't have. And my part B of that question, Ira, is Devin Hester a Hall of Famer?
All right, let's go to part A here, Lee. And that's the difference between me and me and Mr. Isbitz. While he wants to focus on a broken down guy who can't help your wide receiver core, I'm writing columns about let's go find the next Tyreek Hill over here, DeKemper. Let's go find a 23-year-old kid who first and foremost can help you as a receiver and can also return kicks. Devin Hester's lucky if he catches 8 passes next year, Steve. He's not going to help the Buck wide receiver game. So as far as being a specialist for kickoff returns, to me, It would be splashy more than practical. Is he a Hall of Famer? You know what? I'm not dismissing him out of hand, Steve. He was a heck of a weapon, Lee. He was a game breaker in his own way. And he had a couple of pretty good receiver years for the Bears. Not bad. But his main claim to fame is as a returner.
I always thought Devin Hester stunk as a receiver, to be honest with you.
Well,
and if he comes here, ain't going to be a receiver, ain't going to be as a reserve receiver.
So we're both slapping Isbits around
no,
a little bit.
No, if he comes here, it's going to be as a return guy, and he still has skills.
Well, that's a very specific job. It's a very, very specific job.
Well, don't the Bucs need one?
You know, there aren't as many kickoff returns as there used to be.
Yet Hester still can return them. We saw that this past
weekend. This could be a moot point, guys. Devin Hester's talking about retiring, Steve.
You throw money on
Steve,
the table.
Unless you place a call to Hester's agent, he might retire before this elaborate plan of yours gets hatched.
As far as Hester, when's the last time he did anything as a wide receiver? Anything.
He's
Freddie Martino-like as a wide receiver. Honest to goodness. But as a return man, this guy is special. And you brought up how kick return is dead, basically. It's extinct. Yet we saw this past weekend he did some damage as a kick return.
I wouldn't be shocked, Steve. I think the league's moving towards eliminating the kickoff. Now, we'll see if it happens. It'd be kind of a drastic move because, you know, from the Gale Sayers of the world to the Devin Hesters to the Terry Metcalfs, it's been a very exciting play through the years.
Well, here's why you can't
But they say it's a dangerous play. And you know the safety issues are becoming more and more paramount, Steve. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep inhibiting those kickoff returns.
This is why I think they may not. Although I know where you're coming from. I don't disagree that, you know, it's a safety issue. That's only and you had guys like Shannon, although he's not in the NFL anymore. There are guys besides Shannon that think the kickoff is that you need to get rid of it because of injuries. We all know the NFL is a TV sport. You take away kickoffs, how many comebacks are eliminated? How many teams still have a prayer because of the onside kick, which keep people glued to the eyeballs? And dare I say, with the Las Vegas Raiders right around the corner, keeps the Sharpies involved. NFL won't get rid of that unless they come up with some idea how to have a punt in place of a kickoff.
Listen, Calvin, I'm getting sick of your attitude. It's just the bottom line. You know,
all right, let's
hear
it.
Here on the podcast.
You already took a shot at Pewter Report. Now you're turning towards me.
No, I took a shot at the bee. It was an angry bee. Now, see, you're twisting. Now, look, we've got a needed returner. Ryan Smith did nothing. He really wasn't capable. He's a ball catcher out there.
They had the worst kickoff return in the league.
Exactly. So
Humphries is safe. That's it.
I ask you about a guy who just showed his skills to America, okay, and you're giving me grief asking about Devin Hester.
Well, I want a kickoff returner who can also help you on as a wide receiver. Lee, is that too much to ask? And I don't think Hester can do that.
Well, I can return kicks like Hester. Return kicks, average like 30 yards a kick return, and he scores a couple of touchdowns, you're telling me that's not more of an impact than a number five receiver?
I'm a little quick to dismiss you, Steve. Right. I'm so used to dismissing your arguments, I might have been a little
Think about this. The Bucs GM traded up in the second round to get a kicker because impact.
Must you remind us of this?
This is reinforcing.
Buck fans don't want to be reminded of it.
Well, that's a number five receiver. Let's put it this way. Would Devin Hester as a kick return man make more of an impact on Bucks than Adam Humphries starting and returning? I say yes.
I understand. But it's not going to solve their problems of getting a number two receiver.
That's not going to stop them either. That's why I said number five or six receiver. And considering he played for Dirk Koetter in Atlanta, Koetter was one of the few guys that figured out how to use them, caught about 30 balls in Atlanta.
Well, Roddy White also played for Dirk Koetter, and you don't see him joining the Bucks.
And that was probably a mistake in retrospect. I'm not afraid to say
We'll never know.
Never know. I think Roddy White would have been a lot better than the clowns they dropped out there. I'm sorry.
One more game, we're in the playoffs. Toasty mood. Wow, you're
as
toasty.
As Jenkins?
Well, you got me all fired up here, Ira. All right, now look, free agency is here. This is what the fans are freaking out about, excited about. We're,
as they should be.
Essentially less than 8 weeks away, 7 weeks away. And Ira, a guy we wrote about this weekend, Calais Campbell, is likely going to be on the block fantastic, monstrous 6'8", 300-pound defensive end.
You ain't coming cheap, baby. You ain't coming cheap.
Defensive end, defensive tackle. Guy's missed like one game in the last 4 or 5 years. Model citizen out in Arizona. He's just turned 30, and the guy can play. He's a player. Dirk Koetter talked about him as being a legit guy you game plan for when the Bucks.
I think that's a fly, not a B. No, it's a B. It's a little one.
When the Bucks faced Arizona in week two, Koetter was chatting all about, you know, Calais Campbell and his impact and all that. So this is a guy who Arizona doesn't want to pay because they've got other guys to pay and they've got some big salary and he may be looking to move on. Tony Dungy talked to you about making impact piece, one piece on either side of the ball.
That's
and the
right.
Bucks are right there.
That's
is
right.
Calais Campbell that guy? Is he your guy?
Well, let me put it like this, Lee. Would the Glazers have the right at that point to say to Jason Light, I thought you got Calais Campbell last year with Robert Ayers. Now you need another defensive end, a veteran that we got to spend a lot of money on? Well, what happened to Robert Ayers? What's Light going to say about that?
How much money are they under the cap?
An incalculable amount. Incalculable.
It's a couple of vaults of Team Glazer loot. That's how much they're under the cap next year.
Do you think it's admitting a mistake?
No.
From Jason Light's perspective?
No, because this guy plays a different position than Ayers.
All right, well.
I understand where you're going. I do understand where
you're
going.
I mean, you got Noah Spence.
Well, Ayers has had some impact. But here's the thing I've noticed about Light. There's a distinct pattern with Light. He's big on personalities. He's huge on personalities. He's a big locker room kind of guy. Godster Chairless was nothing short of a swinging saloon door. In old Westerns, when it was swinging saloon doors, he was nothing less than a swinging saloon door at right tackle. But you talk to the offensive lineman, whether it was Ali Marpet last year, whether it was Wester this year. Is it Rustin? Not Rustin Wester, but I can't remember Wester's first name. But anyway, Leonard Wester. Those guys rave about Chairless. How Chairless is basically an assistant coach. He pulls those guys aside, teaches them how to be a pro. Both Marpet, I talked to these guys in the open locker room, the final open locker room of the season. Marpet and Wester both said they would not be playing at the level they are without Goster Chairless. So Light has a big, and Ayers fits that thing. Ayers, it's been well reported that Ayers halfway through the season, dog cussed out his teammates, had a come to Jesus moment with him. That's the kind of guy Light likes. He likes personalities like that, locker room kind of guys.
Now wait, hold on, stop right there, DeKemper. That tells me that he learned his lesson from his first year as a GM,
Anthony Collins,
when he brought in the loquacious Anthony Collins, who not only couldn't play Lee, and he's not in the league.
He was dirtbag.
He's not in the league,
yep.
But he was a bad guy.
Yep,
Steve. So he didn't do his research. He didn't do his homework on Anthony Collins.
Someone was doing their homework in their basement. Someone was doing their homework in their basement that winter.
Well,
him.
Light's got to have.
I'm not going to mention Lovey's name.
Light's got to have a piece of that. You can't lay it all on Lovey's doorstep.
Especially Anthony Collins. Look, we know Light played offensive line at Nebraska. If he didn't like,
you know, well,
Anthony
what's
Collins,
what's
they could have found somebody
Smith
else.
Don't know anything about Anthony Collins? You know.
Well, I thought he had that basement. That's all he did was scout talent. But
you know,
in Light's perspective, Light was brought in by Lovey. We all know Lovey ran the ship. We all know
that. And that's why Lovey takes the hit on McCown.
So
you know, I'm giving him McCown, but I'm not giving him Anthony Collins.
Well,
that's letting Light off the hook.
And
this,
I agree.
This is more. This is more. I'm not trying to be a provocateur, but this is just a flip side, counterpoint. If you're Light, and Lovey just brings you in, without Lovey, you wouldn't be a GM. Are you going to say, Lovey, you don't know what the hell you're talking about?
Yeah, but you're saying that the. That the start of the Anthony Collins bandwagon began and ended with Lovie Smith, and I'm suggesting that may not be the case. It might have been
Light. With Light.
It might have been Light and his guys bringing Anthony Collins to Smith's attention. What say you on that, Mr. Isbitz?
I don't know. I wasn't there. But if I have to divide up the sordid past of 2014, I got to give the Jason Light, give him Anthony Collins.
And I'll give Michael Johnson.
I'll give Lovey Smith, Michael Johnson, Darrell Revis,
McCown.
Josh McCown.
Penn.
Penn. And the guys that were ditched, Penn, Zuta. I might give some of Zuta to Light when they did their assessments of the players. You know,
Zuta's still playing.
Yeah.
He's still starting.
Still playing at a high level for a good team. So, those were some old calls. But forget about the old calls, Ira. Calais Campbell, it's interesting that you say that Team Glazer might come to light and say, hey, $10 million a year for this guy. Didn't we just re-up Gerald McCoy? We just got you Robert Ayers. What's going on? Do you think that that conversation happens? Do they do that as a would they do that as like a real football discussion, or would they just be testing their GM to see what comes back?
Well, I for the $10 million that we all think Calais Campbell wants, and for Light to make that commitment, nobody's going to vet Calais Campbell better than Jason Light. Nobody,
because of his background with the Cardinals.
His best Intel. Football friend is Steve Keim.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so tight that Keim, you know, look, if the Cardinals can't afford Calais Campbell, I don't think Keim would have any problem giving Light a fair assessment about Calais Campbell.
There's a reason why, by the way, Michael, to boost your point, there's a reason why Michael Floyd's not on this roster. No one had better intel about Michael Floyd than Light, because he was there when they drafted him.
And he's also very tight with Bruce Arians, Light.
Oh, so yeah, he loves Arians.
He has tremendous intel from Arizona. And from everything I'm hearing, Calais Campbell has no personality issues, no character issues.
No, he's a model citizen. Just to clarify, because I got it up in front of me now, he's missed two games in the last 4 years.
Durable.
Coming off an 8-sack season, 6 passes defensed, which is hell of a lot for a 6'8", defensive end, defensive tackle. Those are batted down passes mostly, a couple of forced fumbles. And
you know what? It goes to probably, Steve, it probably goes to you can never have enough good quality defensive linemen.
No, especially with their deficiencies. We'll ask you this question, Ira. And Campbell actually donated his – he's a Miami Hurricane, donated well over $1 million to them recently. Philanthropic guy. Would you rather pay Will Golston $6 million if it comes to that? Or would you rather pay Calais Campbell $10 million?
Well, Calais Campbell's a difference maker. William Golston's a nice run stuffer.
Yeah.
Bingo. And, Steve, you know, look. Who are we to argue that the Glazers shouldn't spend their money?
I'm not saying no.
You're right.
Bring them on. Make it rain, baby.
Make it rain. And then, you know, you're not locked in the draft, Lee. You know, the more creative you can be with free agency, if you hit it, and Light's been doing a better job as the years go by.
He's learning.
If you can hit it, Steve, you don't get locked in. We absolutely have to take a running back with pick 19, or we have to take a wide receiver. Let's see how free agency shakes out. There's quality out there. You got to go find it.
Steve, what's a quote you used from Light about free agency? He told Deckerhoff on the last week of the season?
You'll have to remind me.
Full throttle.
Oh, full throttle, yes. Full throttle. That's what Light was telling the Buccaneers Radio Network.
And you got to think the Glazers are excited at this point. And that goes to Brooks's remark. He probably doesn't say that without a conversation with the Glazers.
Yeah, it's interesting why Derek would do that. I'm not going to ask Derek, hey, why did you, you know, it's just silly politics. You know, he said it because he means it. But it's in the timing is really interesting on that front. All right, Ira, of course, are you enjoying yourself here at Hooters in Port Richmond?
The sun's out.
Yeah, you're sunning yourself.
The bees, which are bothering you, by the way.
Birds and the bees,
you know. This is a lovely spot.
Obviously, that was not pun intended.
This could be our permanent off-season spot.
Did you like your salad there, Ira?
The salad went right to my hips, right to my hips.
Well, I'm never looking at your hips, so don't worry about it.
I can't live like that.
All right, Ira, so... Now your fans are cheering for you, Ira. Unbelievable.
They're heckling you. Your fans are heckling you.
All right, so Ira, here we are, and free agency beckons. I'll ask you one more question. The NFL is a copycat league, which you know very well, having covered it for 73 years. So as an astute NFL observer, the playoffs, from what you've watched of all these playoff games, does anything in these playoff games make you feel like the Bucs might target a certain receiver in free agency? Is there a name that's now sticking out to you just based on the copycat nature of the NFL and where things are going and how you got to beat the Falcons?
Well,
go toe-to-toe with them, should I say.
I don't know about a specific type of receiver, Steve, but I look at the Falcons, and why are they the number one scoring offense in the league? Why? And my answer is, Lee,
they got weapons.
They make you defend the whole field. The whole field, Steve.
And nothing but the field.
You don't know who they're going to throw to. You can't lock in on Julio Jones because Ryan spreads the wealth. It was a big part of Atlanta's success. They're one step away from the Super Bowl. Nobody's going to be surprised if they beat Green Bay 35-31 on Sunday. And you got to have weapons in this league, Steve. You got to have them. The Bucs don't have enough. And that's why I think sprucing up that offense around Jameis Winston is priority one. Priority one is to maximize Winston's effectiveness, whether it be another receiver, another running back, another lineman. I think that's where the focus is right now for the Bucs, and quite frankly, I think that's where it should be.
This is a Bucs-related rhetorical question. I've thrown this out on Twitter a few times before. It's Falcons-related, since you're talking about the Falcons and weapons. It is beyond a mystery to me how Devonta Freeman graded out lower than Charles Sims. I mean, it's not even.
There's his weekly shot at Charles Sims.
There it is,
Steve. There it is.
I mean, Devonta. I mean, it's almost absurd to try to compare those two. It's almost absurd. I can't. And it wasn't just the Bucs, because Freeman went in the fourth round. It was just baffling to me how anybody could grade out Charles Sims over Devonta Freeman, for that matter, and how Devonta Freeman was graded out as low as a fourth-round pick.
Let's take it a step further, DeKemper. You want Doug Martin released, and you want Charles Sims released. You might as well come out and say it.
Didn't say anything about Charles Sims being released.
I still say Charles Sims has value when he's used in the proper role, and I go back to no further than 2015 when he was outstanding in his role.
I'll throw this at Mr. Hall of Fame voter. If Charles Sims has another injury-riddled season next year, it's time to wave goodbye.
Yeah, he's gone.
It's time to wave goodbye.
You're not hearing
every
anything
year
from me.
He's been missing chunks of games because of injuries. And I think it was Bill Parcells. Might have been Bill Walsh. I'm pretty sure it was Bill Parcells who said, your best ability is availability. And when the guy's on the pine because he's hurt, he's not contributing a damn thing.
I'll say this, Ari. We're surely not rooting against Charles Sims, but if you go 3 out of 4 seasons injured, you're toast. Which is where Doug Martin sits right now. 3 out of the last 4 seasons, the guy's been injured and not available and not good.
And he's going to miss in first three games next year already.
So he's gone. I'm willing to even just flat out call it. But all right, Ira, a couple of quick questions on related to the playoffs, just for fun here. You're the Hall of Fame voter, Tampa Bay's Hall of Fame voter. Anybody who's looking for some more Hall of Fame chatter, Ira, in our last podcast, which you can get on iTunes or Podbean, Podbay, really went a little bit deeper on some of the Hall stuff, Lynch's current chances. We learned that John Lynch is going to be the 15th player presented out of 17.
14th out of 18.
Discussed.
Yep.
And out of the guys coming up there, so Ira gets to sit back.
And I sit behind Dawkins. I sit behind Dawkins.
In the pecking order, go after Brian Dawkins. A lot of good stuff in that podcast. Mike McCarthy, Packers win the Super Bowl. Is he a Hall of Fame coach? Is he a Hall of Famer if the Packers win their Super Bowl?
You know, I do a weekly show with the Mad Dog on Sirius, and he makes a living out of taking pot shots at Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. And I told the Dog a few weeks ago, Why don't you rip me? Because everybody you rip, turns out to be have a spectacular season. Hmm. Look, McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, they look dead in the water. Dead in the water.
About a month ago, yeah.
They were 4-6, Steve. Even Packer fans, loyal Packer fans, were questioning Mike McCarthy.
Well, thanks.
Now, they want to bronze off the bust for him. McCarthy is building a heck of a resume. If he wins a second Super Bowl, and he's still got years to go in his coaching career. And if Rodgers wins the second Super Bowl, he's going in, because people are talking about Eli Manning. Eli Manning can't shine Aaron Rodgers' shoes during the regular season. So to answer your question, I think Mike McCarthy would have an excellent chance to be in Canton.
Lee, you think so?
Of course. I mean, to me, it's a slam dunk. If you got 2 rings and you developed a quarterback like Rodgers, and you almost got to a Super Bowl with Favre in his final years, I think that's a slam dunk.
Now, Steve, there's other guys with 2. George Seifert, Tom Flores, Jimmy Johnson.
Sure.
They're not getting much traction in
Jimmy
that room.
Jimmy Johnson not being a Hall of Fame is an outrage.
They don't have the resume of Mike McCarthy. Tom Flores, what did he do? He was in Seattle, did nothing. But he won 2 Super Bowls in Oakland. He did.
Ira. Jimmy Johnson doesn't have the resume?
Not enough. He should have stayed in Dallas. If he didn't have that fallout with Jimmy, with Jerry Jones, we're not even having this conversation. He'd be a slam dunk. When he went to Miami, he was okay. Just okay. So when he didn't have Aikman's, the big three, you know, the triplets.
Ooh, man,
he had a running attack at Miami, and Marino was an old man. He got him to the playoffs.
They went 9-7. 9-7 doesn't cut it.
Jimmy Johnson took over a 1-15 ball club.
I understand that. He did marvelous work in Dallas, but he didn't stay there long enough.
I got you.
I mean, there are guys in the Hall of Fame now. I won't mention any names, but you know, I mean, it's not even, it's almost absurd to compare them to Jimmy Johnson.
And speaking of that, Jerry Jones, by the way, is up for election this year.
He is.
And to think of what he did to Jimmy Johnson, and to think that Barry Switzer or anybody else can lead this team, that to me is Jimmy Johnson's entry into the Hall, not just his coaching record. He built those Cowboy teams, not Jerry Jones. He built them, and yeah. Jerry Jones didn't learn that and didn't acknowledge it and broke up a good thing, and they both would have ended up in the Hall of Fame.
And I think as time goes by, Jimmy Johnson's well-heralded draft philosophies and his pecking order charts and things like that, his value chart.
They've been reinforced.
That'll be more and more appreciated as the years go by. But all right, Ira, hey, endless fun on your podcast. Any parting words, Ira, anything you want to share about your tennis game, your love life, anything here?
Well, you know, my love life, you know, it's not a 10-second podcast, Steve. But I feel good.
It's,
you know,
quite a one-liner for me.
I am gonna continue to give our listeners and our readers insights into what's going on in Houston. And we're approaching D-Day. We're approaching Judgment Day. Lee, you're going to be in Houston, but you're not going to be in that room with me.
Nope.
You can't help me. And, you know, maybe I lay parts of my presentation on our audience and see what they think. But I already have my opening line. Should I lay it on? Should I lay it on?
You did already. You did. Right. Everybody, go back to
the Paul Krause. All right. It's all blending together.
Spit it out again.
Well, if stats were all we used to determine Hall of Fame players, Paul Krause wouldn't have had to wait 20 years to get in the Hall. He's the all-time leading interceptor. Nobody's going to break his record. And he couldn't get any traction in the Hall of Fame. So it's more than Brian Dawkins' forced fumbles and interceptions and sacks. I'm sorry. Lynch, a big part of one of the great defenses in NFL history. Eagles, good defense. Nobody's talking about the Eagle defense.
I got a question for Ira. It's not Hall of Fame related, but it is Bucks related, sort of.
Yes, sir.
Because this gentleman, you know him better than Steve and I do. I'm not saying you break bread with him over breakfast, but you know him. You covered him. The greatest coach in Bucks history, Chucky, turned down a job to coach one of the best young quarterbacks already established in the NFL. Turned it down over the weekend. That tells me he's done coaching. Because if you don't want to coach Andrew Luck, that tells me you don't want to coach. Your thoughts?
All right, my thought, and I'm going to go right to the heart on this, on Gruden. Next year, look out. Next year, look out. I think he might want to jump back into this thing. And I think it's family related. I think he made some kind of a pact with his wife. And they had three young boys at that time in 2008.
And it's worth noting you just had dinner with his wife.
That's correct. That's correct. And I dissed J.P. Peterson in the process, which is like, you know, two birds with one stone right there. But Lee, his youngest, you know, two are already out of the house, basically. And the third one's going to be going off to college in about a year. So I think at that point, I think Gruden would take a second look. He definitely misses it. He's got a great job. He makes a lot of money. But he misses it, Steve. He misses
that one
the juice.
Year over not coaching Andrew Luck.
But, wow. You know, he's got to love the quarterback, and there's no question that he loves Andrew Luck. So maybe the timing just isn't right, Steve. Sometimes it comes down to timing.
We shall see. We shall see. The Gruden saga continues. I lean more toward Lee, but, you know, times change, and maybe his wife kicks him out of the house, tells him he has to get a job.
There you go.
Since she can't stand looking at him. All right.
We know he's not coming back to Tampa, Steve. Not happening.
What I would like, Ira, I would like, since you are very close with Gruden, I'd like you to get him on this podcast.
Wow.
Come on. You say, John, do my podcast. You know, come on. I'll come out to the office. We'll do the podcast in his dungeon, his film room.
ESPN's got to twist his arm to do Mike and Mike. You want him to do the Steve Isbitz podcast. I'll do what I can, my friend.
All right, Ira, your podcast presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Thanks for Hooters, for in Port Richey, for hosting us here today as we sit looking over the beautiful river here in Port Richey. And we'll be back next time, Mr. Kaufman.